Welcome back to the BSC YouTube channel. As always, your host, Patrick Kerbler. And I'm joined by a now three-time guest, I believe, of the BSC YouTube show, former BSD writer, Clay Sawyer-Teague. Clay, thank you for joining me for a very special coaching search episode.
I'm back. I don't quite know why Patrick had me back, but I'm excited to be back. Plenty of thoughts on all of this, as a lot of you have been reading me say on X for the last month or so, and then the guest post on BSC, they got a lot of people thinking a lot of things, a lot of comments there, both good and bad.
Don't be cowards.
Excited to dive into this one.
Yeah, so for this one, and kind of the reason I had you on is just because our text messages the last 40 days have been mostly, I would say, 75% about this coaching search. And I really just wanted an episode that would simply dedicate it to everything that's happening with Penn State's coaching search, which is a lot. I didn't want to do it too early on where we were wasting our time talking about Kirk Cinetti and Matt Rhule and whoever. I think we have like a decent-ish, at least, idea of who it's going to be. So it kind of feels like the happy point of like we're still far enough away where we know it's not down to like three people or two people or something like that. But we're getting closer where at least we have an idea of what's going to happen. So for the viewers, what we're going to do today is have a draft. Clay's going to pick four coaches. I'm going to pick four coaches. These are, well, realistic, I guess, is subjective in this case. But we picked 14 coaches. And let me share my screen so people can follow along. So these are our 14 coaches that we're going to be picking from. Kalen DeBoer, Alabama head coach. Eli Drinkwitz, Missouri head coach. Brent Key, Georgia Tech head coach. Brian Daboll, former Giants head coach. Bob Chesney, JMU head coach. Brian Hartline, Ohio State offense coordinator. Pat Fitzgerald, former Northwestern head coach. Shout out Jay Paterno on that one. Manny Diaz, current Duke head coach. Tony Elliott, Virginia head coach. Jeff Brom, Louisville head coach. Matt Campbell, Iowa State head coach. Terry Smith, Penn State interim head coach. Alex Golesh, South Florida head coach. And Clark Lee, Vanderbilt head coach. And yes, for the people on YouTube, I know that you can see the screen that I'm sharing, but I'm just reading it out there for people that are listening just on Spotify or Apple Podcasts. So those are the 14 coaches. Tried to keep them somewhat realistic, right? I'm not adding in Kirby Smart or Marcus Freeman or Nick Saban or Urban Meyer.
But I was told.
What was that?
But I was told Marcus Freeman.
We were told a lot of things, weren't we? But I threw you guys a bone. I'm including Kalen DeBoer, despite the fact that I think that he continues to be very, very, very unrealistic. And we'll get to Kalen in a second. But Clay's going to go first because I'm a nice guy. It's not going to be a snake draft. We're just going back and forth. He's going to pick four. I'm going to pick four. This is not like who we think is going to be Penn State's head coach. It is who we would want to see as Penn State's head coach. So with that being said, Clay, I will give you the floor. And you can make your first pick in the draft.
So Patrick reached out to me about doing this episode, I think it was about 2-3 days ago. I was like, absolutely. And around 1 o'clock today, I was like, this is how we're going to do this episode. So that was a fun twist. And then about 90 minutes ago, I decided that I can't do this without taking it very seriously. So your boy has a lot of notes here. I have broken the 14 coaches into Tier A, which has one coach, who will be my first overall selection. Tier B, which includes two coaches. Tier C, which is by far my largest tier, that includes, I believe, 9 coaches, if I can do some math, 8 coaches. And then Tier D, that has 3 coaches that I don't think are happening and nobody would be particularly happy with. So with the first overall pick in the Penn State really needs to hire a head coach sometime soon draft, we have Alabama head coach Kalen DeBoer, who shouldn't come as a surprise to anybody. Among my notes, has an extremely impressive offensive background everywhere he's been, from Indiana to Fresno State to Washington to even now at Alabama. My second note is he literally made a national championship game. That did happen. We all watched it as a head coach.
It's pretty good.
I think he's been mostly fine at Alabama. And being the guy that replaces Nick Saban is hard. Andy has big wins, and I have wins at apostrophe because I think it might just be the one. No, he beat Georgia both years, if I recall correctly.
He beat Georgia back to back years.
So, like, those are pretty big wins. Pretty good recruiter, and brings with him an elite wide receiver coach. I, even today, with some people being like, so Kalen DeBoer, I've had multiple people come to me and be like, there's a thing. I will believe it when I see it, because it just doesn't make any sense, the same way that Mike Elko made no sense.
The only reason that Kalen would make sense is if Auburn somehow pulls off the upset and beats Alabama. But this whole idea of Alabama making the playoff and him deciding to leave Alabama in the middle of the playoff, or even if Alabama makes the playoff and then loses in the first round, Penn State hires him then. One, I don't think Penn State's going to wait that long. And secondly, I don't buy the fact that someone is going to leave in their second year, and this was the whole case with Mike Elko as well at Texas A&M. You get one of these jobs, like, you're not generally looking to jump, like, right away to another job. And, yes, I understand the idea of Kalen is an outsider down there, right? He's from South Dakota originally. He did most of his work in the Midwest or West Coast. But here's where I will push back on the Kalen DeBoer thing, and this is why I let you have the first pick, because, yes, he 100% should be the first pick of this. If Penn State can get Kalen DeBoer, even if he loses it to Auburn, absolutely go and get Kalen DeBoer. Kalen DeBoer took over an Alabama program that had Nick Saban as its head coach. And I understand people saying, you don't want to be the guy that follows the guy. You know, you want to be the guy after the guy. Similar to Bill O'Brien following Joe Paterno and then Franklin coming in and following Bill O'Brien. You much rather be in the Franklin spot than Bill O'Brien's spot. Kalen DeBoer still had a roster that was, what, 75% Saban built at that point?
Good to quite good, is how I would classify that.
Yeah, so why would it be a good thing for Penn State to get Kalen DeBoer when he couldn't get Alabama to a 12-team playoff last year? And if they lose to Auburn, where this is when it becomes realistic, that he couldn't get to Alabama in a 12-team playoff this year either, and both times collapsing in November.
I appreciate your willingness to argue the other side of this for the sake of content.
I might be talking myself into this.
But I do think that there's a world where Alabama goes 10-2 or 10-3 and still misses the playoff, based on some permutations here. There's still, I believe, some strength of schedule stuff that could keep them out of the SEC championship game. Then if you have a situation like you had last year where, say, like a BYU beats Texas Tech in the Big 12 title game, Big 12 gets two teams, an ACC team gets in, suddenly you're looking at 10-2 Alabama sitting in the 13 spot, and they're still pretty upset. I think that would be pretty silly. I think the more likely outcome is if they go 10-2 or 10-3 and get left out, everyone feels like Kalen DeBoer got hard done by, unless they get blown out in the SEC championship game. But also, again, he literally took Washington to the national title game and beat Texas in the process and beat Oregon in those seasons. Like, there's not a world where I would not be happy about Kalen DeBoer, even if it ends up not working out. Like, I would sell myself quickly, but there wouldn't need to be any selling to be done.
No, that's fair. And again, I want to be very clear. If Kalen DeBoer, if Alabama loses to Auburn and Kalen DeBoer's agent, you know, makes the plea to Penn State of like, okay, we're ready to do this thing, 100%, you take Kalen DeBoer. But I do think it's weird that we as a fan base are now like, please, please let us have your 9-3 coach Alabama when he had the most stacked roster of.
It is strange. It is an extremely unique situation. But I also believe we are in extremely unique times when it comes to the sport.
No, that's fair. Just also want to say, I mean, I think the Kalen DeBoer situation is a lot closer to the Ryan Day Ohio State situation last year, where, yes, Ryan Day was potentially one game away from getting fired, but he was also then, you know, three games away from winning the national championship. I think it's way more likely that Kalen DeBoer and Alabama go and beat Auburn, make the SEC championship game, and then beat Texas A&M than anything else happening. Yeah. So,
I was pretty convinced they were winning the national championship until, today's what, Thursday? Five days ago.
Yeah.
I've been saying for months that the most likely outcome was they win it all. So, yeah, we are on the same page with that. And with that, I will just relinquish the second overall pick in the draft to you.
All right. This is where the draft starts, because I don't know what I want to do here. I'm going to go with my guy, though, who I've continued to like, you know, for the past couple weeks. And in essence, I think that this is like all these coaches have their warts. They all have their downsides. There's nobody that I'm like assured is going to be a grand slam. So I'm trying to pick the thing that what do I know is going to work? And that is that Jeff Brohm can coach offense really, really well. And he can coach quarterbacks really, really well. So I'm going to take Jeff Brohm with the second pick. I know that he's had some stinkers of losses the last couple weeks, right? Losing to Cal at home in overtime, losing to Clemson. It wasn't in overtime, but late in the fourth quarter. I just think like Jeff Brohm is a really, really good coach. He at Purdue built Purdue into like a real football program that, yes, it was the Big Ten West, but still played in the Big Ten Championship, which look at Purdue before Jeff Brohm, look at Purdue after Jeff Brohm, tire fire. Jeff Brohm's tenure, like the guy can clearly coach. Aiden O'Connell's in the NFL because of Jeff Brohm. Tyler Shuck is in the NFL because of Jeff Brohm. This guy can coach offense. This guy can coach quarterbacks. And if there's like one major thing I really want out of this, it's like some sort of excitement, like the entertainment aspect of yeah. football. Like yeah. James's teams, yes, it's a lot of fun to win 10 games and beat on Rutgers and Maryland, stuff like that. But James's teams have become sort of a slog to watch. Jeff Brohm would get me excited. It'd be fun to watch his offenses. It'd be fun to watch, you know, his quarterback development and just the idea that they are going to get everything they can out of a quarterback. I love Trace McSorley. I love Drew Aller. John Clifford, I wouldn't say I loved him, but right. All good them, guy. Yes, good guy. All of them good college quarterbacks. None of them ever progressed that much better than they were as sophomores, right? Trace, basically what it was in 2016, there wasn't that big of a difference between him in 2016, 2018. Sean Clifford, same thing. When he first started in 2019 to his last season in 2022, really wasn't that big of a difference. And even Drew, right? There's things here and there between 2023 and 2024 that he got better with, and this year you just completely flushed it down the drain. But there's never been like that development, even though I wouldn't say like Penn State's quarterbacks have necessarily like really held them back. But that is just one thing that I think Jeff Brohm could, you know, at a place like Penn State with the resources that Penn State has and recruiting with the logo and hopefully improved NIL. I know Louisville's NIL isn't that bad either, but I just think that he could get top 100 quarterback. And also be a guy that looks good on the portal, too. I mean, that's what we've seen with Tyler Shuck at Louisville and now Miller Moss, who is fine, but certainly not the creme de la creme when it comes to quarterbacks. I would just be excited just to have that offense and to have that quarterback development.
I don't hate Jeff Brohm. So looking at my list here, I have Jeff Brohm as my number six overall head coaching prospect. So you didn't go completely off the board there. He is in the middle of my tier C. Looking at my notes here, I agree with you that you would win some big games at some point. You would have a fun passing attack is my second note. You mentioned wanting that entertainment value. I think he is a sneaky good recruiter. Some of that comes down to the NIL you mentioned, but he recruited well. I mean, he got Rondale Moore, David Bell. I mean, there were guys at Purdue who wanted to play for Jeff Brohm. He's going to bring intensity with which I mentioned the number of my prospects higher up. Like, give me a coach that shows something. Like, I don't want the idea of a head coach anymore, or the television show version of a head coach. Give me a person, and Jeff Brohm is certainly that.
I think that he would fit like his personality. Like, I know people right originally from Louisville, Kentucky, like a Southern guy per se, but I think
he's a football guy though.
Yeah, I think he much more fits the. Like, if you had to pick SEC or Big Ten for Jeff Brohm, and I know that he's already coached in the Big Ten, and maybe that's, like, part of it, but I envision him much more at a Michigan or at a Michigan State than I do an Auburn.
It feels more Midwest than Southeast.
Yes. So I think he needs to fit at Penn State, culturally.
On the list of cons here, you kind of touched on these as well. he just sort of loses games. Like,
yeah.
And,
yeah.
And this happened at Purdue and Louisville. Like, he's almost the bizarre, he's the Twilight Zone James in that he will win big games, but also, like, why are you losing to Cal at home?
I think it's what, 4-0 or 5-0 in the regular season against top five teams. Mm-hmm. He lost to Florida State and then he lost to Michigan, both in the conference title games when they were top five. But that's like a crazy stat.
I will take that. Yeah. And then my last note is that the ACC is poop and why have you not won the ACC? Because Louisville's like a solid job. And I watched Pat Narduzzi win the ACC. Like my bar for wanting to hire you as a head coach is go win the ACC because it's terrible.
I you know what? I have no rebuttal for the Narduzzi thing. That's a great point. I will say that Louisville's a good job. Within the ACC, I still think it's like, what? I mean, Clemson, Miami, Florida State, all clearly better. Would you say SMU or Louisville is a better job at this point?
I don't know, but I'm not sure it matters okay. in the ACC.
Like close enough, yeah.
Like, look at – we might be in a situation where Virginia and Pitt are in line to play for an ACC. I don't even know whether they're in the same conference or in the same division. But
there are no divisions anymore in the ACC.
Yeah, yeah. So, like, tell me that where you rank in the ACC matters. I don't know that I necessarily buy that.
That is absolutely fair. The only other thing that I'll say, and I know this will fall on deaf ears, but all of Louisville is three plays away from being undefeated. They lost in overtime to Virginia at home. They lost in overtime to Cal at home. And they probably should have beaten Clemson at home last week. So, just... You know, I know that's what we all want to hear after the Franklin era, but
I can tell you who Pat's not drafting at any point in this draft, and it's going to be for a lot of the same types of things that he just said.
That is okay. That is fair. All right. So you get Kellen DeBoer, I get Jeff Brohm. You are up with the third pick.
I have two guys in Tier B here, and I think I'm going to call an audible and go with my number three over my number two. One, because it's more fun to argue. Two, because I think you'll like my number two.
Can you say what two you're between, and then I'm gonna choose which one I think you pick. Sure.
I've got both the Bryans in my second tier. I have got Brian Hartline and Brian Daboll in my tier two.
I think you're going with Daboll.
I am not, but okay. I have Daboll right higher. But they, my tier B was two guys, and they are. Either one. I just want to talk about Brian Hartline, which sounds like Penn State has just been turned off of for whatever reason. It's just there was that brief period where the week that Penn State played Ohio State that people were like, well, they're talking to one another. And all of the intel out of that came basically a way that was like, they went fine. I don't think that's happening, which I don't super get. But Elite recruiter and developer. And yes, is developing at one position, wide receiver. It's mostly recruiting at one position. And yes, it is doing it at Ohio State. But you still have to do it.
Yes.
And nobody's doing it at a level that Brian Hartline is doing it at. And I'm not sure anybody has done it ever at a level that Brian Hartline is doing it at. They're at the point where, like, their fifth and sixth string wide receivers would be the best receivers on Penn State's roster right now, and I don't think that's particularly controversial. Like, that's real deep. Has been around an elite culture. I've decided that I'm becoming a culture guy. You got to know what it takes to win, which is very funny because I one of my picks later might contradict that. But knows what's needed to get over the hump. I have it's a sexy name. It's good for the PR. It's good for the vibes. You hire Brian Hartline, and recruits are going to be excited. The television shows are going to tell you that it's great and where all the upside is. I mean, does that matter long term if he stinks? No. But, hey, it wouldn't hurt to get off to a quick start. His calling plays for an offense that is ridiculous right now, which, again, Ohio State talent, that helps. But, like, he is the play caller for Ohio State right now. And they are getting better every single week with a redshirt freshman quarterback, right?
Yes.
You know what I'm saying? Yeah. Who looks awesome and confident and comfortable. And then lastly, I have that he may bring home Pat's boy, Billy Fessler, who Pat has been on for like 6 years as a future Penn State head coach. So in the world where that happens, this might be the timeline that happens. And that would just be fun. I would love that for you.
Yeah, that's, I mean, I was going to say, Billy Fessler's all me. I wouldn't say I've cooled on Brian Hartline, but it's just the fact that, like you said, it doesn't seem like there's really that much there, that Penn State's probably going to go in another direction and not go with the coordinator route. But yeah, I mean, yeah, you hit everything on the head when it comes to Hartline. Like, as Penn State fans, it can be like tough to admit this, but like Ohio State is, they are what you want to be in college football. Like them and Georgia.
Oh, I don't even think it's debatable. They are the most stable, successful program in the country. And right now, I mean, it may not be that way in 2 months if Caleb DeBoer does what we said earlier and wins it all. But right now, I don't know that it's all that far. I mean, I guess Georgia. It's Ohio State and Georgia and Bama. And they are well clear of anybody else.
Yeah. So getting someone like Brian Hartline, who, you know, has been with Ryan Day since day one. Hartline's the guy that took over for Zach Smith when he got ousted for his, you know, troubles. So Hartline has been there the Urban Meyer's last year. And then
Jerry, Ohio State to fall ass backwards into something like that.
Like that's just classic Ohio State. But right. So there for Meyer's last year and then has been there with Day the entire time as wide receivers coach and eventually, you know, being named co-offense coordinator, offense coordinator in 2023. And now finally has, you know, play calling duties. Is this Ryan Day's offense? Yes, it absolutely is. When Dan Lanning took the Oregon job in 2021, did we look at Dan Lanning and say, okay, yeah, he's defense coordinator at Georgia, but that's Kirby Smart's offense, and he's doing with Jalen Carter and Jordan Davis and Trayvon Walker and all these other dudes? Like, okay, maybe we said that, but like, that's this is how it goes.
You're either good at this or you're not. The only way to find out is to give somebody the opportunity.
Yes, and that is where you're going to get your coordinators. You get them from the elite programs, right? Penn State's not going to hire. I'm sure we'll talk about Brent Key at some point. I really like Buster Faulkner, the offense coordinator. You're not going from Georgia Tech offense coordinator to Penn State head coach, right? Like, you need to do it in an elite program. And Brian Hartline, yes, I'm sure Ryan Day's helping him some, but he's doing it. Like, the offense is good this year. Like, Ohio State, like, they're super efficient. I feel like they're still kind of holding some things back, like as far as like their up-temponess, like they're pretty conservative.
You're with the hobbled Jeremiah Smith by all accounts as well.
Yep. So I like everything about him. Like, on paper, it seems like this guy is going to be a star wherever he lands, whether that's at Penn State, whether that's at, you know, Michigan State or Minnesota or Cincinnati or West Virginia or Maryland or right. Name any place. And if you think that that guy's going to be a superstar, then it's like, why do you need him to go to Cincinnati to go 8-4 and then 9-3? Like, just hire him right off the bat. Like, he has seen firsthand what a truly, truly elite program should look like, right? He has intimate knowledge of everything that Ohio State does, from investment to training table to NIL to just dealing with egos in the locker room and all these five-star guys that come in and expect to play. Like, I really, you know, I get in some sense why Pat Kraft is so gung-ho on getting someone that's been a head coach, but I don't know. I feel like there's a couple coordinators in the country that you'd feel comfortable handing over the reins to, and I do think Hartline would be one of those guys. So, yeah, I am down with that. Any other final thoughts on Hartline before I make my pick?
Not really. I'm a little surprised that he has not gotten more smoke to Penn State in terms of actual traction than he actually has. But hey, we will find out in 2 or 3 years whether Penn State makes the right hire. And maybe it is Brian Hartline. We're all being kind of had the wool pulled over our eyes here.
All right. With my next pick, again, I feel like I'm going to go a little conservative with this because I do like Brian Daboll a lot. And like that would probably excite me more than the guy I'm going to pick. But I just had too many questions about Brian Daboll that I unfortunately, you know, can't answer. So I'm going to go slightly conservative here. I'm going to go with Brent Key, Georgia Tech.
I don't hate that.
So
that would be my number four on my list. So that is the first person in my tier C.
I think the thing with Brent Key, like a lot of what I've been thinking about is like him and compared to Eli Drinkwitz, just because they're both Southerners. Culturally, does it fit? Like everything I've seen about Brent Key is okay. Like, yes, it's going to be a difference for someone who's never coached with the Mason-Dixon line, has, you know, basically only coached in Florida or Alabama or Georgia his entire life. And how do you go and live in Central PA? Not that Central PA is really that different from, right? If you drive 20 minutes outside of State College, it's not that much different than, you know, Birmingham, Alabama, or places in Georgia. But there is like the idea of this next Penn State head coach, I think, when it comes to NIL and it comes to fundraising, like they're going to have to talk to big business people from Pittsburgh and New York City and Philadelphia. I think he would do a good enough job of that because, and we'll
smart
see.
School.
What was that?
Coming from a smart school.
Yes, right. Smart Georgia Tech grad himself. I believe he was going to be an engineer, but he, you know, said that, okay, once he got there, he's like, never mind. I believe he did business of some sort. But either way, I think like one of the things when it comes to Eli Drinkwitz, like we say like, oh, it's, you know, as a Southerner, how is he going to fit up here? I think the other side with Eli Drinkwitz is that he's like kind of an a-hole and like super brash. And like, it's almost like the Nick Sirianni thing where it's like when things are going well, you kind of enjoy it. But when things aren't going well, like I just don't know how he's going to rub off on people the right way. I don't necessarily have that worry with Brent Key. Like I old school, but at least comes off as like an old school football coach. Not super brash or into himself or anything like that. Actually, like a pretty quiet guy overall. I was reading like an interview with him, and he just said like one of the things that surprises most people when they meet him is that he's not as loud as they thought he would be. That he's pretty timid and you know, kind of reserved to himself. And yeah, that maybe that doesn't sound like the type of guy that you want like fundraising. But I think again, after what we just had with James Franklin, I feel like that type of personality could actually mesh pretty well with the Terry Pegulas and with, you know, all these other big Penn State boosters. So I like that side of Brent Key. And I just kind of think like his style, his philosophy as a coach, like some, I almost feel like Penn State needs to look at themselves in the mirror sometimes, because we spent the past decade, like trying to be Ohio State. James wanted us to be Ohio State. I don't know if Penn State could ever be Ohio State. We are much more likely to go under the Michigan plan with, you know, what Harbaugh did of jumping into, you know, good offensive lines, running the ball, ball control, things like that. Yes, I would like excuse me. I would like not to tread out Liam Clifford at wide receiver, but I don't know if we're ever going to get to the point where, you know, Penn State has, you know, four wide receiver sets.
Right.
Like, I almost feel like going.
There is a cap here somewhere.
Yes. So I feel like going with someone like Brent Key, who was a former offensive line coach and can instill that toughness and the grit and the grind, right? It's not pretty, it's gritty type feel. I just feel like that fits at Penn State.
Yeah. Like I said, I mean, I have Brent Key high on my list. I've got him. It's my number four candidate. I like that he's from the Nick Saban tree, spent 3 years there, won a national title. We've talked about an elite culture. He came in the interim role for Georgia Tech and immediately fixed a disaster that Jeff Collins had created.
Ranked wins against North Carolina and Pitt right away. That's what got him the job.
Won big games by Georgia Tech standards. He didn't win against Georgia last year. And I know this is an excuse, but like, there's a huge gap there. And I love the way he called that game. And the way the Buster Faulkner called that game, he played that entire game to win that game. When they were ahead, when they were behind, when they were in overtime, it was never a, hey, we need to survive this scenario. It was, what do we need to do to go win this game? And it didn't happen, but I like the way that he called the game. I like the way that his teams wear teams down. I think he's an underrated recruiter, where the Southern ties help. He kept a guy like a five-star offensive lineman, Josh Petty, in Georgia Tech. He was able to get them a little bit of NIL funds, which, again, for a program like Georgia Tech, is not the easiest. I think there's a lot to like there with Brent Key. I mean, he's not at the tippy top of my list, but if Penn State were announcing Brent Key as the head coach in 3-4 weeks, it would not take me more than a couple of minutes to be like, okay, here's the plan. Let's roll.
It's not super sexy. It's not gonna right you if when they do the coaching grades, it's not gonna get an A+.
It's probably gonna get a B though.
It's gonna get a B+. And I just get the feeling that in like 3 years, people would be like, damn, they kind of nailed that. And again, this is always a two-way street. Like, does Brent Key want this? And this is something that I can kind of say, like, for all these coaches, do they want to coach at Penn State? Like, that is a big, big part of it. Like, there is a reason why Louisville and Georgia Tech and Arizona State have guys that graduated from that school coaching there, because coaching college football is not easy. Like, yes, these people get paid millions and millions of dollars to do it. It's not 80-hour weeks. It's more than that. It's like a true lifestyle. So it's like, if Brent Key truly looks at Penn State and says, I'm willing to leave my alma mater to go there, like, I think it would work out. I'd be curious about what his staff is going to be. He would obviously need some Northeast connections. But, you know, as a guy who coached under George O'Leary at Central Florida, who coached under, you know, Nick Saban, I'm pretty sure Brent Key was one of the was thought about to be maybe an offensive line coach or a tight end coach under Bill O'Brien, but it didn't work out. But I have to imagine that he has, you know, some contacts that he can build out, you know, enough of a coaching staff that does have some ties.
For what it's worth, Brent Key is currently making a reported $4.1 million at Georgia Tech. And while I think that he would be in line for a substantial raise, whether Penn State was coming after him or not, there would be a large gap between what Penn State could potentially offer Brent Key and what Georgia Tech could offer Brent Key. Look, like you said, there are several other factors in there, but man, those numbers start adding up at some point where you have to at least go, it's a big gap.
And I will say for Brent Key as well, like LSU, Florida, whoever doesn't get Lane Kiffin, even Auburn. I know it seems like Auburn is kind of settled on John Summerall. At least that's all what we're thinking. But I have a tough time seeing Brent Key, whether he's at Georgia Tech or not, like, he's going to be making $8 million somewhere if he wants to. But yeah, I really like Brent Key. I think that'd be a good decision. So I have Brent Key and I have Jeff Brohm. You have Brian Hartline, Kalen DeBoer, and your third pick is coming up.
I mean, I guess based on my tier, I'm going to take Brian Daboll, who I do like, but I don't know. Like, I don't have enough talking points to sound really smart here, other than the fact that Pat has sold me on Brian Daboll with his sheer energy over the last 10 days or so since Brian Daboll has come available. I love that he worked under Nick Saban. He won a bunch of Super Bowls under Bill Belichick, which I know at the moment is exactly the best selling point for, like, that's a lot of winning. Was successful as an NFL offensive coordinator. Helped develop Josh Allen into an MVP level talent. Was good in his first year with Giants. Was named the AP NFL Coach of the Year. And even when he got fired, I think that his players, especially young players, seemed to really enjoy playing for him and playing hard for him, other than the fact that he kind of got Jackson Dart killed. But I think the Giants might be a bit of a disaster on the whole in a you just can't escape Giants stink right now. So I'd be interested. I don't know. I think it is some of it's novelty. Some of it's the unknown. Some of it is, I wonder if this goes terribly or if it goes really interestingly. So there's a morbid curiosity there. But I guess I think that among the coaches that we have on this list, especially we have left on this list, if it works, it will work very big.
Yeah, I mean, as you said, I, you know, love Brian Daboll. I love the idea of him. And yes, the idea is like also kind of forgetting what the downsides could be because, right, like basically no recruiting experience at all. I mean, he had that, 9 months at Alabama or 10 months or 11 months, whatever it was, the 1 year at Alabama. Has not dealt with, even if he was at Alabama for like 2 or 3 years back then, I don't know like how much recruiting experience helps if everything was like before 2021, because NIL has changed things greatly. So needs to figure out NIL stuff. I don't greatly care about the fact that he was like a failed NFL head coach. Like that kind of is like a prerequisite for having a former NFL head coach come be your college head coach. because if he was successful, he would be staying in the NFL.
You know who is also a failed NFL head coach? Nick Saban.
And Pete Carroll at one point, too. And yes, I like, you can argue.
These are the outliers, yes, yes, yes.
But, like, I – listen, the New York Giants are a disaster franchise, and they have been for, what, 12 years now? I don't even know the last time they won a playoff game. But, like, I don't think that you just go from being the NFL head coach of the year to being a complete idiot who doesn't know what he's doing within, like, a two-year span the way that Brian Daboll has. And not that being NFL head coach of the year means that you automatically are like the greatest coach in the world, because like Lovie Smith, for example, was NFL head coach.
Like Dan Jones was his quarterback. So like you did something correctly.
No, exactly. You look at like the Giants wide receivers that year, it was like Isaiah Hodgkins and Richie James and Darius Slayton and Daniel Bellinger as their tight end. So, or Cody Bellinger, I can't remember which is the baseball player, which is the tight end, but. Either way, main point being, like, he was a good coach. It didn't work out with the Giants. Hopefully those things that he worked on as far as, like, creating a strong culture and being accountable and maybe not constantly throwing temper tantrums on the sideline and trying to get your concussed quarterback back into the game. Yes, all those things are bad. But as I said a little bit ago, like, all of these guys have their warts. And not to, again, it's tough to compare anything at Ohio State, but, like, I saw Matt Patricia be the Eagles defense coordinator and was like literally, you would have thought he was throwing games. 2 years later, he's at Ohio State, which, yes, a little bit different when you had that type of talent edge. But Matt Patricia is now like looked at as like one of the best coordinators in all of college football. So
Al Golden?
Al Golden, exactly, which same thing, right? Like Bengals, complete disaster, terrible, bad. But Notre Dame looks great, and Notre Dame's defense has been a little up and down under Chris Ash. So the NFL just has a way of making a lot of coaches look really dumb, and you go to college and all of a sudden you kind of have the edge. So again, I like the idea of Daboll and all these coaches. As I said, it comes back to, do they want the job? If Brian Daboll truly does look at the Penn State job and say, even if it's not, I'm going to be here for 15 years, but let me go to Penn State for 5 years. Let me see what my kids are talking about. Let me see what my son, why he loved it so much. Let me see why my daughter's there as well. Like, I know that's like, I kind of like make a joke of it of like, oh, he can wear like the Penn State dad t-shirt on the sideline, but there that's is kind of cool. Something, like, it's cool. And there is something to like your kids being there. Like it would be cool for Brian to be like with his daughter currently there now, like, oh, my daughter's here. Like I'm the head coach of where my daughter goes. And like, even this week, like there is something to like understanding and getting whatever school you're at, whether that's Arizona State or whether that's Texas or whether that's Penn State, like having a true appreciation for it. And that is like a big thing of what Penn State fans want. Like a big reason why James Franklin was fired was everything had just gone on way too long and we'd reached a breaking point. But it's also that he lost the fan base, like totally, totally, totally lost the fan base. Like of any Franklin defender that there still was, I think even like the staunchest ones were like, yeah, this should probably be an amicable split at the very least.
James Franklin's view of Penn State to me is, if you ever talk to your friend that really loves a band, and they love that band, they have seen that, they've listened to every album, they've seen them live several times, and you go and you see the band, and you go, yeah, I like them. And you're like, okay, I see it. And you say, oh, this song's cool, and I like this, and I like this. They say all the right things, but you don't feel it in the way that your friend feels about that band. That is the way that I felt that James Franklin felt about Penn State, and some of this is sour grapes, some of this is hindsight.
Absolutely.
Some of this is they lost. I'm sure I didn't think that the whole time, but everything felt like, here is what I am supposed to be saying because this is the right thing, more so than like, I feel this in my bones about this place.
And look at like this week with like Terry breaking down, talking about like how much it means to sit in the seat and to be the head coach at Penn State and just what Penn State means to him, from his dad going there to, you know, multiple family members now at this point, his kids going there, like, and now all of a sudden, like Penn State fans, despite the fact that he's 1-3 and like sort of like kind of made mistakes in the Indiana and Iowa game that potentially, but yet people are still like, I love Terry Smith. I would be down if he's head coach. Like, the Penn State fan base, they just want to be loved, man. They just want to be loved, and they want a coach that, like, loves the school as well. So, I'm not saying Brian Daboll is going to come in here and, like, love it in that sense. But, like, I do think that there is something to like understanding what Penn State is, understanding the university, and just understanding, like, again, there's a reason why we're picking Brian Daboll right now. Not
you can see the avenue for that happening.
Yes. No, exactly. So I love the idea of him, like, you know, good offensive coordinator from all accounts, you know, did a great job with Josh Allen. Just think he'd be a good fit. So, and if he wants a job and he's motivated to do it, like, listen, NIL, yes, it's a real pain in the ass. And I'm not saying it's not a complicated, you know, thing to get. Like, there's a lot of,
how hard can it be?
This, right, we're not asking Brian Daboll to go perform surgery. It's basically like
give the big money to the very good football players. Like,
yes, you hire someone, you hire a GM who understands the landscape, and within a month or two, Brian Daboll, smart guy, I'm sure, will understand. Yes,
the general give
money
concept.
To good players. Yes. Yeah. So, I'm down with Daboll. All right, third pick for myself. So we still got Drinkwitz, Chesney, Fitzgerald, Diaz, Elliott, Campbell, Smith, Golish, and Lee. I'm going to go with – this is actually a pretty easy one for me. I'm going with Bob Chesney.
That is the next person on my list. So I would love to hear why you were going with Bob Chesney.
First and foremost, he's just hot in the streets right now. Like, if you would have said Bob Chesney's name last week to Penn State fans, would be like, who's that? You say it this week, and they're like, I will die for that man and his hair. Just unbelievable hair. So Bob Chesney, James Madison, head coach. We talked, and we have the receipts to prove this. Like, there's been some more smoke with Chesney this week, which is now, you know, Penn State fans are coping and now talking themselves into him. I texted Clay 4 days after Penn State fired James Franklin and said, when it was like the Matt Rhule and Kurt Cinetti's and Matt Campbell's getting brought up, I said, I think I'd rather have Bob Chesney than Matt Campbell. And he's just a super impressive guy. And really, like, the important part of this, excuse me, one of the important parts of this and, like, why Penn State has been in no rush to make a head coaching hire is because, like, what does happen this season, like, matters. Like, okay, Jeff Brom, you lose to Cal and you lose to Clemson. Not ideal, but, like, I still have a pretty good idea of who Jeff Brom is. But you still want to see, like, let the season play out and let guys move down or up the list depending upon what happens. What James Madison is doing in the Sun Belt is, I mean, it is belt to ass every single week. The last 4 weeks, they've scored over 50 points 3 times. They're holding teams in the Sun Belt, I believe, to 15 points a game, and they're averaging over 40 points a game overall. Like, it is complete domination for James Madison, which, okay, he found the program in a pretty decent spot with Kirk Cinetti, even though, you know, Cinetti did bring over like a ton of talent to Indiana, but still, right? He's still a war on the backs of like the Cinetti recruiting, but he has that thing running perfectly. I think, you know, we talk about like culturally, just such a great fit as a guy from PA, you know, has coached in Northeast basically his entire life, has risen the ranks from D3 to D2 to FCS, now to James Madison. There's a drawback of the fact that he's never worked at a proper program, which, again, all these guys, they have their warts and they have their weaknesses, and it's about finding out what matters, what doesn't matter. But the dude has won everywhere he's been. Salve Regina, Assumption, Holy Cross, James Madison, doesn't matter. He's there. He's going to win. He's going to get a better job. I think that's going to be the case whether he gets the Penn State job or not. I don't think he stays in James Madison long. And just from, I mean, even listening to what I could on YouTube of different press conferences and interviews, you know, just a good personality. I do worry that he's like a little bit too nice. Like, he almost reminds me of like a teacher in a sense sometimes. But a strong personality and a guy that I think, you know, with the Penn State logo on his chest and with the NIL backing and with the support staff that Penn State has, I think he could recruit really, really well. And just a guy that's not going to get outworked and is like really going to care. So what are your thoughts?
I've got Chesney as, like I said, the next guy on my list. He was one spot ahead of Jeff Brom to me, just, which is very funny because very different hires in my mind. A winner and a program builder everywhere I have on my notes. Hopefully Penn State doesn't need a program builder. I think, well, you said he's a very nice guy, but he's a confident guy too, you know.
Yep.
He's got a little bit – it's not brash in the way that Cignetti is, but there is an expectation of winning in the way that Cignetti had where, yeah, I'm going to come in and I'm going to win football games because that is – what I do and what I've done everywhere else. I think there's a fun aspect of the unknown. Yeah, like there's some guys that may have a higher floor here where it's like, okay, well, like it's a little safer, but like, who knows? Like, why not? It could be anything, even a boat. I do think a weird element of the positive there is like, if it turns out he sucks, I think you can get out from Bob Chesney pretty quickly without much issue. My concerns a little bit are about like putting a staff together, being able to recruit. Penn State's going to have to do something to field a team that is capable next year. Is he going to be able to identify talent in the portal? How much people talk about like bringing talent from JMU. I'm not sure that's replicable in the way that it was in Indiana.
Yeah.
I think the Indiana, everyone wants to do the Indiana thing, and the Indiana thing is a one-time thing that is a combination of a lot of variables that came together.
You don't want to bet on JMU having like literally three or four All-Americans that you can.
Beyond that, like I just think their first year schedule set up for them to gain momentum. They hit the portal really well. Beyond JMU, I mean, Cignetti was great and has a lot more experience. I do think that, and I do think there's going to. I don't think they're ever going to be terrible under Cignetti, but I think that they will. I don't think that they're going to be going 11-1 or 12-0 every year. Maybe I'm wrong. So I don't think that's super replicable. But like, I don't know. I like it. I dig it. I think that one of the things that Patrick and I have discussed in recent weeks offline is that the idea that anybody knows what is or is not a good hire is a complete joke.
Yeah.
Like one of the rumors today we saw was about John Sumrall in Florida. That seems to have now gone out the window. You would have loved that hire, the same way that people loved the Billy Napier hire, the same way that you mentioned there was no reason that Tom Herman shouldn't have been good at Texas.
Scott Frass in Nebraska, Luke Fickle at Wisconsin.
There's so many. You don't win a hire when the hire is made. And there's a chance that one of the things that the issues Bob Chesney is it may take patience that isn't there from the fan base. And I think that there's this weird I know that Pat Kraft put it this way and may have set himself up, but I think that the way that Pat Kraft messaged led a lot of people to believe that he was like, oh, well, the next guy has to go 12-1 and make the playoff semifinals and win big games in year one. And I don't quite think that was what he meant. I mean, we'll take it, but I think it was more of like the next guy needs to be able to do this at some point in the foreseeable future, whereas the previous guy was not able to do this for a decade. So there's that element with Chesney where I do think that there's a chance that he would come in and next year go like 8-4 and 9-3, and everyone would be like, this guy sucks.
I'll be honest. If you told me right now that Bob Chesney in year one went 9-3,
I'd be fine. I would hire him tomorrow. Schedule sucks.
I'd hire him tomorrow.
But I think,
can we just take a moment? I think the idea that Penn State is a pressure cooker and needs to win right away is just like not true. There are always going to be stupid fans, like 100%. There's always going to be stupid fans. But I think that people, as much as it was, okay, James was going 10-2. Penn State fans aren't happy with 10-2. They need better. The next coach has to do better right away. Like, okay, I guess there's like a little bit of truth in that, but that's just like not fully understanding. And I'm preaching the choir here. Like Penn State fans are the ones that listen to this. Like they understand like the stuff with James was like so beyond like the 10-2 stuff. It was just, he was annoying. Like he was annoying.
There's a large crossover here, I would imagine, among listeners. Not the majority, but a large crossover that I would believe it, Sixers fans. And a lot of us Sixers fans told ourselves that Ben Simmons was going to figure it out and he was going to shoot. And we knew by year two, maybe year three, that was never happening. Everyone knew it. But you told yourself that it would happen. And we're getting closer, and there are signs, and you'd see things here and there, and you'd be like, okay, cool. Like, it's going to happen. James Franklin, by, I don't know, 5-6 years in the middle of this, we were all like, we're inching closer. He's gonna start winning these big games. We're in them routinely. And then a year or two later, you were like, you knew that it wasn't gonna happen. For and it wasn't always gonna be for the same reason. His clock management got better, he recruited differently, he changed things, but there was always going to be something. And you knew in your heart that there was always going to be something.
You know
And I
what's
think a big part of this is that finding somebody where you can at least lie to yourself and believe that there is the chance of winning a big game.
Yes. Yeah, it's but that's the thing. It wouldn't be lying with Chesney or with Dable or with Key or with DeBoer. It would just flat out be hope. And like I know that we talked about this before. Like fans do not want consistency. They just want hope. Like you want something to You want to have like a reason to think that things are going to get better. That's why, as again, going back to the Sixers fan thing, like that's why tanking made so much sense when the Sixers did it, because they just had 10 seasons of never being better than the seventh seed. And it was like, okay, I would rather just completely bottom out than be stuck in this purgatory. And not to say that 10 and 2 was a purgatory, but 10 and 2 is a purgatory at this point. Like we after the Oregon game, we talked about this in our purge episode of like if they don't win the Oregon and Ohio State game. Like, I just don't know where they.
It's called that one.
Yeah, like
I
where
didn't think
they.
it would be that. I didn't quite think it would be that quick. But that was a must-win game. And boy, did I not think it was going to be a must-win game in the way that it was.
Yeah.
But boy, was it ever a must-win game.
But right, say that Penn State loses to Oregon, they go and they beat UCLA Northwestern and they squeak one out against Iowa and then lose to Ohio State, and then we're sitting here 10-2, and then we get the 10th seed. And we go to Ole Miss and we probably lose there. And then we just do this over and over and over and over. And I get that that sounds like that we aren't grateful when, and
I am
then
not
we're not like,
grateful. No, I'm fine. I am not grateful for that.
perhaps we will look back at this and think like we are idiots, that
I
we
love a
will.
cheeseburger. I can have a cheeseburger 2 or 3 times a week.
Yeah.
I can't eat a cheeseburger 7 days a week.
Will we look back and say that we were like Tennessee fans or like Nebraska fans, and we're about to go through
Maybe.
10 or 15 years of never getting to 10 wins? Maybe, but at least try something different. At least try something different.
As I mentioned earlier, I wrote a piece for 2 weeks ago, or maybe it wasn't 2 weeks ago, 10 days ago, about the bravery of Penn State fans in this coaching search. And a lot of it was about being willing to risk having a bad program, which I think Penn State's actually a lot more insulated than some people think.
Yes.
But want something for yourself. I mean, and not everyone consumes sports in the same way, but in the way that the game is written, the point of the game is to win it all. Want to believe that at some point you can do that. And I don't quite understand how anybody could have sat through the last 8 years.
yeah.
I mean, starting in like about 2018 and actually convinced themselves that they believed that that was a possibility. And somebody like Chesney, while it may not be splash, can you can talk yourself into that
Yeah,
pretty easily.
it might not be splash at the onset, but like I call it sour grapes. Like there's a part of me that is almost glad that Virginia Tech hired James Franklin over Bob Chesney. Like Bob Chesney, I think like long term wise, like scares me more than I think James does. Like James in the immediate, yeah, it's gonna be a pain because it's gonna take a lot of Penn State guys. But if you told me 5 years from now what coach I think is going to be the better head coach, Penn State or not, right? If Bob Chesney goes to UCLA or Arkansas or wherever, so I'm not just saying like Bob Chesney at Penn State. I would pick Bob Chesney. So I just think like this game, like James is only 53. I get that, but like I almost think it's like I think it's almost like wrestling on the enough Clay being a wrestling guy. Like you only have so many wrestling matches, and James is a psycho. But I do think that it's like you. I think that we've seen the peak of James Franklin, I guess, is the point I'm
I
trying to
think
make.
beyond that, and this is not, I don't want to make this a trash on James Franklin episode just because
Yeah, no, we're doing like a
tired of
huge
it.
dive here,
I'm
but.
tired of it, so after this we can get to our next picks. But I think one of the things for me is James talked to the Virginia Tech board about still being able to do it the traditional way about developing ties and families. And I love that. I love that about him, and I actually think that probably makes him a pretty damn good human being. I don't know that we live in a world where that's necessarily true, and that's not me speaking just on college football. I just think that we live in such a transactional society that you either are or are not, and if you are not, I don't know that you can win at the highest level in the current situation. Maybe I'm proven wrong. I don't know. Yeah. But
I saw a tweet today, and maybe it was a fake Virginia Tech fan thing, but that James is trying to get Ricky Ronnie to be his offense corner and Brent Pry to come back as
defense. I also saw that. I think that's probably a BS, but I would love it so much.
But that's the thing though, James, like, he's so set in his ways that him
it's even possible.
Just trying to run it again. It's just funny. Last thing really quick, and then you can take your pick. I just also want to say, like, different programs at different times and different things. I remember in 2016, if James was going to get ousted before that or after the Minnesota game, had they lost, the guy that I wanted was Kyle Whittingham at Utah. Terrible fit. Terrible, terrible, stupid fit. But my thing was, like, I know Kyle Whittingham is a good coach. I know that he can come in here and he can win. Go 9-3, 10-2, 8-4. Because at that point, like, that is
what I want. But the world has changed.
Well, the world has changed, right? Penn State has changed now at this point. And that's even what we're seeing with Virginia Tech and how pumped they are to have James Franklin, because they would love to be at the spot that Penn State is at. We have lived that for the past, you know, 8 years at this point. And if we're being, you know, spoiled, so be it. But, like, I just want something different. And if it takes a risk, but go right ahead. Take the risk. So, anyway, your final pick.
So our last three picks have all been from my tier C, and I now have 1, 2, 3, 4.
So you have Kalen DeBoer, Kalen DeBoer, Brian Hartline, and Brian Dable.
Yes, I have five coaches who are the top three on my board. Actually,
can I pick who I think you're going to go with here?
Yeah, let me walk through something real quick. I have five coaches left in my tier C, and they're all in the same tier as Key, Chesney, and Brom, but I think I like Key, Chesney, and Brom more than I am going to like anybody I say after this. Who do you think that next coach is going to be?
I think the next coach is going to be Drinkwitz.
It is not. The next coach is going to be Coach Patrick joked about not being on our list. Next coach is going to be Alex Golesh for me. Wow. I love the ties to Josh Heupel. I love the gimmick offense. I think all offenses are a gimmick, especially in college football. So run that gimmick all the way to the edge as far as you can. Pretty intense guy, real intense guy. Went to school at Ohio State. Is that worth anything? Probably not. But it's fun. Russian, also not worth anything. Just found that interesting and cool, like born in Moscow. Cons. He hasn't really won all that much at USF, like really at all, which I don't know why people think he has. I think it's because USF was so awful in the years leading up, but like I think we need to reframe how we view bad jobs, and there's actually a lot of jobs on this list that people looked at and were like, oh, well, that's a terrible job. And just the world has changed and the college football world has changed so much that maybe those jobs aren't quite as bad as you think they are.
Well, especially at USF in the AAC.
Looking at you, Vanderbilt. There was another one on Duke, which we will talk about because it's confusing. But USF, like, you're in Tampa. Like, how hard could it possibly be in the AAC? So, like, I don't know. I'm selecting Alex Olesh because, again, cool, fun, unknown. There's a chance he comes and gets better athletes and puts up a ton of points. As a young guy, he seems like he has a ton of energy for recruiting and for fundraising and things like that. But I don't super love it. This entire next part of my tier C, I would be like, yeah, give me a day or two and I'll get myself there. But not sure how I'm going to feel, but that is my pick.
Golash is intriguing. I like him at Arkansas. I like him at Oklahoma State. I like him at Missouri. Kind of goes back to what I was saying with Brent Key. I just don't know if he meshes philosophically with Penn State and how he runs his offenses, which, like you said, like a little gimmicky. I think Heupel has done like a slightly better job of, not making it so gimmicky. So maybe Golash could do the same, but I don't know. I think it's just a little bit too, gun and shoot, air raid for Penn State to really fit. But he would work hard. Like he's a grinder of a recruiter. Like everyone says that about him, that he's, constantly on the road, constantly at high schools doing stuff like that. So I think that they could do, clearly they could do worse, but I wouldn't say he's particularly high on my list and just don't think.
Quirked up James, like I like
Little bit.
similarly that.
I mean, the thing is, it would at least be fun offensively. Penn State
Yeah,
might be 7-5, but they're scoring 30 plus a game
and you'll
easily.
know quick. I think you know pretty fast why this was, but that is my last pick. Is Alex Bullish, the head coach of the South Florida Bulls.
Right. I'm going drink, but we can't let it go on this long. Listen.
He was too lower on my list, by the way. I have Alex Bullish at number 7 on my list. I have Eli Drinkwitz at number 9. Was and I considered up until the time of the pick, my draft board was open to these two and Clark Lea, who we will talk about a little bit.
Yes, to be quick with Drinkwitz, he's someone that I originally didn't like at all. I didn't have him on my top five hot board that I released after the UCLA game. I then did a little bit more research about him, put him on. I actually had him at number two. I now have taken him off again for a couple of reasons. One, a couple of different things that we talked about. Just like culturally, I don't know if a Southerner, tried and true, born in Oklahoma but raised in Arkansas, like very much as an Arkansas guy, I just don't know how he culturally will fit in state college and at Penn State and dealing with the boosters that he's gonna have to deal with. And I just think, like, personality wise, like, he is what a lot of people thought James Franklin was, like, as far as like the brashness. Like, when people say like used car salesman and, just like egomaniac, and I know I keep saying the word brash, but like brash, like, I don't think James was nearly as much as that as like people thought he was. And maybe he was, like, during his Vanderbilt days and when he first got to Penn State. James had really, really cooled it on that side of things, almost to his detriment, where he just stopped showing like any emotion at all, like
It
ever.
was not very, he was not very adversarial,
Yes.
which I would like my head coach to be.
Drinkwitz, on the other hand, right? Like, Missouri beat Auburn and he was standing on like one of their like brick pedestal things with the mascot, like screaming at Missouri fans, like getting hyped up. He was, when they beat the Ohio State team in the Cotton Bowl 2 years ago, he was doing snow angels, or I guess it wasn't snow angels, but he was,
Confetti.
yeah, confetti angels. Like, that's cool, and there is a part of me that like wants an
But
a-hole,
man, you better win.
but you better win. And the closer we get to all this, and the closer that this all becomes like reality of whoever Penn State hires, I'm trying to like think of Eli Drinkwitz as Penn State head coach, and like makes me like short circuit. Like, I can't see that guy, his face, his hair, the visor, the sometimes wearing the glasses, the Southern drawl. I just can't see it. I can't see it. He's a good coach. He's a good coach. I just don't think it's a fit at Penn State. The same way that I don't like, I almost like trying to think of it in like Michigan terms, because I don't think like Ohio State coming open would be a fair comparison, because that's, they would take whoever they wanted. All right, if Michigan opened, who would I think would be a good hire for them? If they hired
Nobody.
Drinkwitz, I'd be like, okay, Drink's a good coach.
But nobody's scared of him.
And I don't really get it. Like, I'd be like, that's a really, really weird fit. Compared to some of these other guys, like, if they get hired Brent Key, I'd be like, oh damn it, that's actually, he's a good ball coach. Like I feel like he could figure things out up there. So
So, good.
go ahead. I've been talking about Drink for a while, but go
I
ahead.
just, with Drinkwitz, I mean, I've got the littlest pros and cons here. He was dominant in his first year as a head coach at App State, and that was his first year as a head coach anywhere. Went 12-1, In theory, he's an offensive whiz who learned under Gus Malzahn. In the last 3 years at Mizzou, he's 28-8. It could be better if Bo Pribula were healthy. Those are all good wins. Good. Great. Cons. The offensive stats don't really back up him being an offensive genius. Like, their offenses have been good, and they put up a lot of points against outmatched teams, but I think he's only top 30 points against a top 25 SEC team one time, or at least like one time in the last 4 years or something like that. It just really wasn't all that impressive. I do think Missouri is probably a better job than people give it credit for, especially with recent investment. Now, maybe he gets credit for getting some people more invested. I will see that. And then also, like, how many times in the last 2 weeks have you and I exchanged quotes where you were like, who said this, Eli Drinkwitz or James Franklin? And I just can't do that again. I can't have, you should actually be happy for this at my school again. I will short circuit.
Yes. The funny thing is, like, people will say, like, he's like sort of like an SEC version of James Franklin because of the not beating a poor record against ranked teams, specifically poor record against top 10 teams. It's not that worries me. And worry might not be the right word. It's not really that turns me off as much as it's the press conference stuff and the personality. Like, it's just a little bit too close to home. And I don't want to do it again. I don't want.
He gave a good to elite speech. Like, I just.
2 weeks ago. 2 weeks ago he gave it.
Can't do that. And I get that the theory is that, oh, well, he would simply be going from good to elite. But, like, we didn't actually get there. So.
He also, somebody asked him this week about Matt Zollers, their true freshman starting quarterback, and another top 100 kid that's from Illinois originally, a 4-star wideout. They asked about them, like, coming back next year. I don't even know what the question was. And he
hitting the portal. Well, how do they retain them, I think, in the portal?
Yes. He was like, how are we, like, of course we'd like to, but it's going to be tough to retain them. Like, we don't have the NIL budget other schools do. Like, whether that's true or not, and this was always, I know we're doing the James Franklin thing again, whether he's telling the truth or not, does not matter. You have to realize, like, the press conferences and talking to the fan base, like, that is something.
Don't tell the world those players are going to be back because you have the money. And if it doesn't happen, they can say, what happened? You could say, I don't know. I'm asking the same questions you need to ask other people.
Yes. Yes. Like, there's a way to go about this stuff. And using your press conferences, which are, you know, only being listened to by the most diehard of diehard fans to complain about how your NIL isn't good enough and we might lose our two best true freshmen. Like, sorry, I don't want to be in the same spot just like we were at James, where it was everything was not his fault. Everything was legacy Penn State's fault, or the generation's fault, or the fans' fault, or whatever it might be. So. That's my dream thing. Good coach. I just don't think it's a good fit at Penn State. I think he makes a lot more sense at Florida or Auburn or wherever it might be.
So that leaves us with, we've reached the end of our draft. My first pick was Kalen DeBoer. I have Kalen DeBoer, Brian Hartline, Brian Daboll, and Alex Golesh. That leaves you with.
I got Brent Key, Bob Chesney, Jeff Brom, and Drinkwitz. Okay. So,
I will take some time here and go through the rest of my list. At 8, between Golesh and Eli Drinkwitz, I have Clark Lee. I like that he spent time in a very good Notre Dame program. Didn't murder Brian Kelly while there, which is impressive in its own right. Good defensive mind. Has Vanderbilt. I know people talk about Vanderbilt, or like, James won there. Derek Mason made bowl games there. He has them in the college football playoff discussion. That's even another kind of step up from where those guys had them. Cons, his record long-term in Vandy isn't good. And like I said, multiple coaches have shown you can have success there. Is he just kind of an old team and Diego Pavia merchant? Who can say? Down at Matt Gamble. and feel free to pop in here if you.
I was going to say, let me say something about Clark Lee then. I wasn't sure if you had something else to say.
No, go ahead.
You know, I'm not a big Clark Lee guy. Don't like how he looks. Reminds me of Mini-Me from Austin Powers. So if they do hire him and Penn State loses the game, I will be posting Mini-Me photos constantly. I don't think he'll be the hire regardless, but now listen, I understand that my second pick was Brent Key, and now I'm going to call Clark Lee a quarterback merchant. Well, Brent Key is, I guess, sort of doing a little bit of the same thing with Haynes King. Little difference is that Haynes King was, like, not that good at Texas A&M. Like, I think Brent Key and Buster Faulkner and Georgia Tech should be getting more credit for, like, taking a talented kid who didn't work out at a place and actually doing some good with him.
Whereas, also, do we get Buster Faulkner with Brent Key? Probably not, but that'd be cool.
Yeah, valid point. The thing with Clark Lee and Pavia is that not only did he take Diego Pavia, he took the head coach, Jerry Kill, and he took the offensive coordinator, Tim Beck.
So it's like, it was just like, hey, help. That's what his record pre-Pavia was not just mediocre. It was bad. I don't have the – I didn't write the number down here, but there was a couple of two-win seasons in there.
He was winless in the SEC the season before.
It was not a good sign.
Yeah. I think, like, Lee's a good mind, like you said. Like, I trust him as, like, a football mind. I know this is crazy while saying that Vanderbilt's ranked in the top 20 and only has two losses right now. I just haven't seen enough from him to want me to want him. And I understand, like, the
– very fair.
I understand how that looks when I'm saying I like Bob Chesney and I like Brent Key, but this is what we're saying. These coaching searches are just, like, there's no rhyme or reason to, like, why some things work, why some things don't. I'm just not a big Lee fan.
The end of my tier C's here I have Matt Campbell, went to Toledo from the region, turned to Iowa State from poop to not poop fairly quickly.
Yes.
Won a Fiesta Bowl at Iowa State, asterisk, COVID year. I've got a longer list of cons here, though, which is why we're getting to the end of my tier C. Kind of seems like a dork. Some similar vibes to James. Not super sure what exactly he does all that well. I mean, other than kind of win, but not really. Like, I just don't – what's the big selling point? Where's the big upside there? I want to know why he stayed at Iowa State so long. Like, what are you afraid of?
Yeah. That's the big question with him. Is it – because it depends upon who you talk to, right? Some people say that he's staying at Iowa State because he's waiting for the right opportunity. Other people say that he doesn't –
a lot of opportunities, I think, probably would have been pretty interested in Matt Campbell.
Yeah, but – and other people say that he doesn't want to play the politics game of, like, that he wouldn't be good at a big school because he wouldn't be – like, he just wants to be a football coach.
Well, then lastly, my whole thing is, like, the way the Big 12's gone, even those last couple years with Texas and Oklahoma, like, was it really that hard to have a little success there? Like, was it really?
Yeah.
I mean, Dave Aranda went 11-2 and won the conference and won the Sugar Bowl.
Matt Rhule with Baylor went to the Big 12
championship. So that is my second to last tier C there. And my final tier.
Real quick on Matt Campbell, this would be a situation of, like, if Michigan hired him, I almost think it would work out. If Penn State hired him, I wouldn't think it would work out. I don't know if that makes any sense. But
I don't get the why of Matt Campbell at Penn State. Somebody would need to explain that to me. My last tier C entrance is Manny Diaz. My first pro is that he's a very, very handsome man.
Not as handsome as Chesney, though.
Matt Santos from the West Wing vibes. Right down to the point where his dad was the mayor of Miami. So we are getting very political there. Has an exciting defense, creates splash plays, creates turnovers. Cons, wasn't very good at Miami. Duke is a perfectly fine job that Mike Elko and David Cutcliffe both won at very recently in an ACC that was harder to win in. And then lastly, like, I don't know how much he had control of this, but this is also a con. Like, he took a perfectly fine quarterback and paid more to get the same level of perfectly fine quarterback. Paid, like, twice as much. Like, well, what are we doing? What? Why did that happen?
No, you said, right, cons, not that great at Miami. Cons, also, like, not that great. Like, this is a case in point of, like, what I was saying earlier with, like, Chesney, of, like, what are you going to do throughout the season to, like, prove yourself? And Diaz was a guy that had a total solid chance at potentially getting a job if he, you know, goes off and goes
10-2.
And do what Georgia Tech's doing. And so they lost to Tulane and UConn, and they're 5-5. So.
Taking Tulane's quarterback and losing Tulane is automatically disqualifying. Like, yeah. From the rip. I will not like it, and I will boo it, and I will be happily proven wrong that I'm incorrect. But you can't pay a shit ton of money to take a team's quarterback from them and then go and lose to them.
I don't think Manny Diaz will ever coach at a better school than Duke.
He probably shouldn't. Like, yeah. Sorry.
This feels like where he should be.
My last year, and I will run through these very quick. Terry Smith, awesome guy, PSU through and through. Penn State players love him. He recruited really well, probably personally in PA. I think he locked down a lot of Pennsylvania. And we've seen that. I think he'd probably be like almost laughably aggressive to the point where it is like what, like Dan Campbell levels of like, I am aggressive here, but like maybe take a field goal one time. I think that's a pro because just I have to watch the games. Cons, never been anything beyond the position or never been above the position coach beyond the title. And just really like not the type of guy you name your head coach if you want to be taken seriously as a national title contender. Like, I'm sorry.
He also, like, let's be honest with ourselves. He's done fine. He's done an admirable job. He hasn't done anything. Congratulations. You beat winless in the Big Ten Michigan State.
Like it would very much feel like charity. Nobody wanted Larry Johnson when they didn't hire Larry Johnson. Why do we want them to hire Terry Smith now beyond the fact that I would like to not lose Terry Smith? Now, that being said, I think that I am not a fan of athletic directors mandating any hires for the head coach. But I would be very happy if Pat Kraft was like, oh, and by the way, new coach, Terry Smith is your co-defensive coordinator and defensive backs coach if he wants the job.
Yes, 100%.
We're down to Tony Elliott. I don't know where that came from Pat. He is a two-time national champion as an offensive coordinator. He's younger than I thought he was. Kept UVA together through a really unimaginable tragedy with multiple players being shot and killed. He sort of kind of, if you cock your head to the side, I think still has Virginia in college football playoff talk. Knows when to go all in on portal and NIL to save his job. The cons already sucked every other year that he's been there.
Yeah, I'm actually a little surprised that he like doesn't have like any actual fans from what I've seen, like for him to get the Penn State job. Just because he took over Virginia after Mendenhall, which just completely different. Like, Mendenhall's a really good coach. Just
vibes.
Like, yeah, like, different, totally different vibes, totally different culture. So it was going to take some time. 3-7, 3-9, 5-7, 9-2. Like, on paper, that is, like, kind of what you would be looking for. Like, oh, wow, okay, so he's really built the program. Thing is, Virginia really has not recruited all that well. And even this year, it just feels a little bit too smoke and mirrors.
Their wins are terrible. Like they've not beaten a good team, and many of them they have scratched by. I think they have 3 overtime wins and another 1 or 2 by like 2. It's just I was kind of surprised to see this name on the list altogether.
Yes, they beat North Carolina by 1 in overtime, Washington State by 2, Louisville in overtime, Florida State in 2 overtimes.
Penn State would beat Virginia by multiple scores, I think, if they both played the rest. And yeah, it might be like many multiple scores. And then lastly, I just have Pat Fitzgerald, like, mostly because why is this discussion like, here's where I wish people on the beat would be a little bit more honest about how this whole process works. Pat Fitzgerald is not going to be hired as Penn State's head coach. I will give up talking about Penn State if I am wrong on this. It will make a lot of people happy. Pat Fitzgerald is being interviewed because Pat Fitzgerald, by most accounts these days, cut the short end of the stick with how his Northwestern tenure ended. has some ties to people at Penn State, seems to be a nice enough guy. And this is a, hey, let us get you an interview. Let us get your name back out there. Like, come talk to us. Maybe, like, there's a role as, like, a linebacker's coach, depending on who shows up. It's just that it's not a real thing. Like, why somebody on one of the various paid subscription sites should probably tell the viewers that, hey, we know that we are saying this is a thing, but we are also intelligent enough to know that it's not, and we're not going to insult your intelligence by making you think that it is.
Yes. I mean, the Fitzgerald stuff is just, I don't get it. The other part that I don't get of this, of like, okay, like, I have no problem with Penn State interviewing everyone. Like, this was part of the reason why you make the move when you made the move. You're going to have, like, I know that there was some speculation of, like, Penn State trying to hire someone in early November. It's like, the earliest the hire was ever going to be made was November 30th, unless for some reason Urban decided to change his thoughts on NIL and decided that he would go all in on that. So it was always going to take this long. So you were always just going to have weeks and weeks and weeks of this. So it's like, okay, talk to Pat Fitzgerald. Like, it doesn't hurt. You gain information of whatever it might be. I don't know. But why, like, Bruce Feldman, who I don't think is, like, a dumb person and generally has a pretty good read on things, why he keeps mentioning him, it just doesn't make any sense at all. I don't even know who Pat Fitzgerald's agent is.
I don't know who his agent is, but he's
the guy's doing a great job, though.
Doing a hell of a job.
The guy's doing a great job. And I just, the other, like, do people not realize how bad Northwestern was at the end of Fitzgerald's tenure? Like, that's the, like, the hazing scandal aside, which, man, like, I don't think Penn State wants to touch that of, like, of any program. Like, we have had, we're good. We are good on that end of things. But, like, even if Fitzgerald just took a leave of absence, just or say that he semi-retired or whatever, and just said, you know what, I'm dead at Northwestern. I don't want to do this anymore. And now he's trying to get back in coaching. The last 4 years were, like, terribly bad. They had the one COVID year where they went 7-2, I believe, and they went to the Big Ten championship.
4-20 over his last 2 years combined.
Yes, 4-20, and he was 3-9 in the year in 2019, I believe. So he was 3-9, had the COVID year where they went to the Big Ten championship. Okay, credit to them. And then 2-10, 2-10. He was not a good coach. He'd clearly lost it. And David Braun coming in, taking over in a very precarious, bad situation.
Made the program immediately better.
Yeah, like, doing quite well. Like, it kind of has Northwestern back to where they were, which was like this 5-7 win-ish team that will kind of make a bowl and be really annoying and pull an upset every once in a while. Like, that's like the most confounding part of all this, is that, like, okay, it's one thing to say, oh yeah, Pat Fitzgerald, like, Midwest guy, like, kind of makes sense at a Penn State, like, culturally. He was a bad coach. Like, he's not going to fail upwards to the Penn State job. I'm sorry, but he's not. So, yeah, Pat Fitzgerald. I would talk myself into basically anyone. I don't think I could talk myself into Pat Fitzgerald. That would be one of those that even after a press conference, I'd be like, this sucks, dude. So.
Not. Yeah, it's not happening. So, that was the last name on my list. Like I said, I had a very, very large tier C of guys that I would take time. I could have probably split tier C if I wanted to after Jeff Brohm. But beyond that, I don't know. We'll say Penn State's probably going to come and hire somebody that's not on this list at some point in the next 3 days, because
that's how
these types of things work.
That's how we're going to end this. I'm going to put you on the spot, and I will give you my guess as well, because it's changed. I was always saying drink. I don't think it's going to be drink anymore. Who do you think is the hire?
I think it's going to be Brent Key. I don't know why. I know. I think the smart thing for me to say would probably be Bob Chesney, because right now, not only does he have momentum, but also it's like the most attainable.
Yeah.
And Brent Key also has some stuff going on with, does he make playoffs? How long he's coaching? He's at his alma mater. But I just think he fits a lot of what Matt Rhule said that he wanted. It sounds like they spoke with him multiple times. I think the Penn State will have the financial might to pry him away if they want to. I don't know. I'm going to go Brent Key.
I would, if you told me that Georgia Tech does not make the playoffs, I think I would say Brent Key as well. But I'm not sure that that's going to be the case. So I'm going to say Bob Chesney. I'm going to believe all the smoke that's happening. I think it's going to be Chesney. But again, I have zero idea. Like, I'm pretty confident it's going to be one of the coaches on that list, but beyond that, I don't know. I would guess Chesney, but man, it feels like every other day there's like a Drinkwitz and Key, then Bob Chesney.
Here's another one then. So we have Saturday is the 22nd. That makes the final Saturday of the regular season for these coaches, the 29th. 12-1 over under Penn State naming a head coach. Before or after?
12-1, so that's the Monday.
Yeah, sure. I think something like that.
Yeah. I will, assuming that if it gets leaked on 12-1 that it counts, then I will say under a push.
Okay.
I don't think that they wait. That's like, this is what I mean though, like the time.
There is part right now with the recruiting class, and this is a whole separate podcast that will not be tagged on here because it would go forever. But they're at a point where I'm not sure that the recruiting class in terms of high school can be salvaged.
Yeah, no.
So,
but I still think, like, from a roster perspective, you still want to want to get the coach in as soon as possible, so they have as much time as possible to re-recruit the roster.
Okay. Well, here's a quick question then, and then we will kind of get you out on this. Where is the split between guys you'd be willing to wait for and guys you would not? Who on this line, if you knew you could get them, would you go midway into December 4?
So, like, would no? If I knew for sure that Kalen DeBoer would come to Penn State,
after, yeah. How long are you waiting for Kalen DeBoer?
I mean, anything would have to be before January 2nd. That's anything would have to be like
the calendar is so bad. The calendar is so laughably bad.
The thing again, is, this is what. Episode. No, just real quick. I know that this is a super long episode, but I think we touched on almost everything that we could talk about. The thing with like the January 2nd portal opening, which, by the way, just really, really quick, there was this new bylaw that was passed that once a program makes a hire, the coach has 5 days, and then it's after those 5 days that players can enter the portal. That is a bylaw, but it's a bylaw only if it happens after January 2nd. So I know that there was some confusion about, like, if Penn State makes a hire on December 7th, does that mean that Penn State's portal starts opening on the 12th? No, that is not the case. So Penn State's portal will open on the 2nd, basically, no matter what. What I think that people are really overlooking here is specifically if Penn State does not make a bowl game, or even if they do make a bowl game, if you hire a coach like Kalen DeBoer after the first round, that means that he most likely gets to campus, best case scenario, December 23rd or something like that. December 24th. How is he going to re-recruit the roster in a week? Like, this is not a video game where you just take, I'm going to put 50 points on Kaz Colton.
You need to have however many bodies for 2026.
Yes.
Which, like, is becoming a bit of an issue. And even Terry Smith today was like, I was today's press conference earlier this week, where he was like, yeah, we don't have a coach, so.
You know, and that's I don't really care about the recruiting class is one thing. It's keeping as much of the roster as possible, and also giving the new coaching staff as much of a chance to as much time to see what else is out there as well, and to get an understanding of, okay, this is what we have, this is what we want to get, like,
yeah,
just,
yeah.
It, more time the better. And that's even for the coach too. If you're, that's the thing, and that's what I was saying with Elko and like DeBoer and all these guys about waiting. It's like, if you're Elko or DeBoer, why the hell do you want to jump to Penn State or any other job January or December 31st or January 2nd or whatever it might be, or even December 22nd? Like, it just, even timing wise for them, it just doesn't make a lot of sense. Like,
The Mike Elko stuff was so funny.
I'm not going to say anything because I don't want to get in trouble.
I have made my feelings abundantly clear to those who I need to make my feelings clear to.
Yes. And we'll see. We'll see on Kellen DeBoer. I continue to say, like, I continue to say that's unrealistic. And a big reason for that is because I feel like Penn State fans now have it in their mind of, like, we need to get Mike Elko or we need to get to Kellen DeBoer, when that is just a stupid, stupid place to put your mindset at with this coaching search, because they're so –